and welcome to Queering Eve, a spoiler-free podcast about the TV show Killing Eve made by some queers.
Hi, I'm Tamara, and I'm the one who today empirically experienced that rice and lentils indeed do taste amazing together.
Yes!
I know I am 31, I'm sorry.
I have experienced this before, but I think I don't apply this to my life often enough.
Hi, I'm Nina, and I'm the one who now has some green hair. And yes, I am 28.
Thanks to whom?
Thanks to you, Nea. Nea dyed like the back lower part of my hair green. It's hidden so that I can not be judged while I present my thesis topic, and then I'm gonna go all green.
Hi, I'm Nea, and I'm the one whose niece turned 4 yesterday, and I talked to her on the phone, and she read my name on the phone screen, and it was amazing.
They grow up so fast.
It's time to talk about Killing Eve Season 4, Episode 2, which has the title Don't Get Eaten, and it was directed and written by the same people as the last one, so that's Stella Corradi and Laura Neal. General thoughts and impressions?
I hated it the first time I saw it, and then I kind of liked it the second time I saw it. So, mixed feelings.
I hated it the first time I saw it, and I still kind of hated it the second time I saw it. A bit less, but still.
Fascinating. I also had the experience of liking it better the second time, just like with the first episode. So that seems to be a trend, at least for me. Is it a trend if it's just 2 times?
Nope.
Yes.
Let's get into it.
So we begin in London, and there is a torture scene. And Nina and I were both very proud for immediately identifying where this is happening.
Yeah. As a fan of Anne Boleyn, I recognize the Tower of London.
Yes, as Nina is a fan of Anne Boleyn, we went to the Tower of London when we were in London and saw a play of similar vibe, and that's why I recognized it. So we see Hélène and her child, and they are watching this torture scene, and the child asks, "Does it hurt?" And Hélène says, "Only if you let it." Which is very stupid. And then we see Eve in cosplay. And she's literally wearing a trench coat.
I mean, the last time she was in a hoodie, which is also very stereotypical. Like,
Yeah. And we learned that she has a tracker, which she will place into Ellen's bag. And for some reason, she's, like, talking to Yusuf while all of this is happening. Then we immediately see Eve in a different setting, and she is in a sexy dress, the one we saw in the trailer.
It is her!
It is her.
It's so hot.
Yep.
And she is, again, following Hélène, who is on a date with a hot person.
Yes! Hot!
And again, Yusuf is texting Eve, like, stop dilly-dallying or something. And I had this thought, like, why? Why is Yusuf? And I came to the conclusion that he is there so that Eve has someone to talk to, so that she can, like, voice out loud her decisions and all that. So, Yusuf is the Geraldine of this season.
Oh my god. I wrote down that Elaine is talking to a hottie, and I wrote hottie the way a text is written in the pilot episode of The Vampire Diaries. H-A-W-T-E.
I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I like it.
Thank you.
My note of this scene is that I actually find Elaine extremely off-putting. I would not fall for her flirting.
I find her extremely off-putting throughout this whole episode, except while she's talking to the hottie and then making out with the hottie. Those two scenes are extremely hot to me because that one hot person has the energy of making the whole situation so hot. I those two scenes made this episode watchable for me.
Wow, jeez. Okay, so let's get through these favorite scenes of Nina's to get to the part she hated. So yeah, we see Elaine and Hari making out, and it's great. I enjoyed it very much. And Eve is there.
Following them, and she puts the tracking device in Elaine's
And there's this really
purse.
Cool shot of the overhead mirrors when all of this shuffling is happening between them three and some random ladies from the elevator, which I loved.
Yeah, I liked that. I want to say this so that we have some We Are Stupid content. I did not notice her putting the tracking device in the first time. And so when Eve came to Elaine's house and Elaine gave it to her, I was just like, what is that? What is this weird pen vape thing? What is happening? I do not know what a tampon looks like.
Yes. Let's go to a different place. We see a bus, and we are informed that this is Hemel Hempstead.
No way, this is a real place.
Yeah, I know, right?
Let's just pretend it said not Cuba. Okay, so since I am assuming neither of you had been to Hemel Hempstead.
How did you know?
I will instead ask you this. Have you ever been camping?
Yes. Multiple times.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I hate it.
I generally hate the outdoors, and camping is just like outdoors extreme. So
I'm really not a fan.
I love camping. I love it especially when you have the supplies needed to make it actually a very comfortable experience, which is possible. Let's go back to Hemel Hempstead. This bus that is there has broken down, and Villanelle is on there, and she's
experiencing a metaphor in a form of a butterfly.
Yeah.
That.
What's the metaphor? The
metaphor is that she's experiencing a rebirth, just like a butterfly did.
All that I noticed was that the vicar was reading a Bible quiz, and he said something about, on which day did God create the creatures that fly in the sky? And a butterfly is a creature that flies in the sky.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He also then tells us how he's gonna die. So he asks, who killed Cicero with a camping nail to the head?
Wow.
Tent nail.
I sure did not catch that.
We are very stupid. Okay, so those are the metaphors that are happening. And in the literal world, Barbara is very focused on the Bible quiz and no one else. No, at least May and Villanelle are not listening. And then Villanelle gets up and takes the bus microphone from the vicar and basically tells another metaphor about how she is a sinner that is repenting and how important that is to May.
Yeah, and how May is supposed to find this hot.
Yes.
I do like the look on her face when she's saying that.
We get to the camping place and learn that tents have been allocated, and Villanelle got the biggest tent all for herself. And this appears to be some kind of punishment, and I don't get it.
Oh, I thought it was a hallucination.
No. So at first I thought it was she got the biggest tent so that Phil could show everyone how special she thinks she is. But then I think this is actually a tent meant for supplies. So it's a tent that people would frequent a lot because there is food in there for the campers.
Wow.
I think. I'm not 100% sure, but I think.
I like both of your interpretations. Mm.
I truly just assumed it's part of the Jesus hallucination. So let's get to the Jesus hallucination, I guess.
Immediately when we got here, I had the thought, oh, the scenes from the trailer will happen here. And I think it bothered me way less than in the first episode. Because also in the first episode, there were way more scenes from the trailer. Yeah, so now let's get to the Jesus hallucination.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
God. Well, first of all, her name is Jesus.
Really?
Oh.
No?
She's the Villanelle Jesus.
I mean, I get it.
I don't know how to, like, describe it narratively. I can say what I liked and didn't like. I liked that Jesus calls himself Villanelle's spiritual guru. I thought that was hilarious.
And what did you dislike?
Everything else.
Okay.
The main thing that happens in this scene is that Jesus tells Villanelle that Phil is suspicious of her, and to get on Phil's good side, she has to first convince May to like her again.
But I thought we were all gonna say what we liked and disliked.
Oh, I fucking hate Jesus. I already said in the previous episode.
I fucking hate Jesus.
I hate Jesus. I guess in a way it was fun to get this Villanelle on Villanelle dialogue, because I do imagine that she has conversations like that with herself a lot. So yeah. In that way it actually was kind of interesting, but I don't know. I just dislike this specific image, I guess.
I guess Jesus is another Geraldine of this season.
Shit. Yeah. Yeah.
I like certain aspects of it. I think that certain things are fun, and yeah, I enjoy some of the dialogue, but overall, I think I liked seeing Jesus in the previous episode, but I think having him be there this whole episode is just overkill, and I do not enjoy this bit.
Mm-hmm. For me, what I liked was that Jesus said, for you, I'm you in drag.
Mm-hmm.
And said, like, does this make sense? And Villanelle was like, yes. But also specifically that he said, you in drag, because that's a queer way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did not like that he slapped her ass. And yeah, I don't enjoy all these dialogues and the whole, like, story of Jesus guiding her through all of this. I enjoyed one or two little parts of some interactions, which we will get to, but overall, I hope we're done with Jesus.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer and being so excited to have this religious story with Villanelle, and now it just sucks.
But let's go talk about some more religion. We have Villanelle then going to May's tent to offer her an, quote, olive branch.
I do think it's cute that she, like, makes these references and the way she talks. I just don't like her interacting with May after that.
Yeah, she's trying to convince May that it's really so good that she tried to kill her but didn't kill her because that means she's getting better and it's all thanks to people like her. And it's just like, that's some nice manipulation there, Villana. It's not like she doesn't do that all the time, but...
It sucks to see it with May, who is just so, like, innocent and good.
While this is all happening, Villanelle has this terrible monologue about how basically she thinks she's evil because other people think she's evil. And I think this is my least favorite part of this episode. I just hate it.
I am really hoping that this character... quote, development that is happening with Villanelle here is
killed at the end of this episode.
Yeah, basically, like we already talked about this, how if someone wanted to fix the mistakes of season 3, they would have to somehow kill that plot line. And I still have hope that maybe after this episode, we won't try to make Villanelle good anymore.
But oof, what a way to get there.
Okay, let's go to the next scene, right?
Yes.
We have Eve looking at pictures of Villanelle at the website of this church, which I'm so proud of Eve for knowing how to use the internet a little bit.
Aww, well, she knows when it comes to Villanelle. About whom she does not care.
Oh, yeah. And she hides it from Yusuf, who comes in.
Yeah, I found that interesting, because she is generally so open with him. But I guess in this episode, we see that even though she is so much more open and herself with him than she was with Nico, it's still not just like a completely transparent way of communicating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is still refusing to take anyone's advice. And this is the hill she might literally die on. But it is, like, one of my mini pet peeves when people on television are on their computers and they're trying to hide something. And then they just close the computer, which the other person can totally accidentally open and see that. Instead of just closing the window, which takes the same amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, also they see you closing the computer. They wouldn't see you closing the window. I think it's a silly trope, but I think it makes sense for Eve. Then comes another part that I enjoy, which is Yusuf giving Eve some train tickets to Paris, and he makes a joke, or he pretends it's like a romantic getaway, and Eve is just like, nope, not having it, nope, nope, nope. And obviously he is joking because he does know her, and it's because he finds out that Hélène is there. Yeah, I enjoyed this because of how much it makes sense for them as characters. And also, it reminded me of something from the book, Codename Villanelle. In it, Eve stays late and doesn't come home very early to Nico, and then she feels bad about it. So she has the thought of, maybe I should buy some tickets to Paris so that we have a romantic getaway. That'll make him, like, feel better about this. And it's like, in a completely emotionless way where you can see that she does not care about this at all. She just sees it as a way of placating Nico. And I think that's fun.
Eve also has this idea, which she presents to herself and others as not really like a serious idea, but just a thought that she could just go and knock on Hélène's door. And then she has some trouble letting go of it. And Yusuf is trying to talk her out of being extremely unreasonable. And I feel like he's kind of mansplaining a little, but also he's right. No, I mean, I support Eve doing whatever. It's fun for me.
I mean, he does as well, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. So Eve decides that she needs to get a second opinion.
Did you know what she was gonna do?
No.
I assumed that she would go to Villanelle. But
I thought she would go to Carolyn.
Okay.
So we see Eve on the way out of the hotel, and she sees the fish tank, and she stops by it, and then she feeds the fish. Can someone explain this metaphor for me?
I thought maybe she's murdering them, but I don't
know. Yeah, me too, but it didn't seem that way. Yeah. Maybe we'll get to know more, like she's...
Maybe there's a fish plot.
I mean, I definitely got the vibe of her lingering to that moment with Villanelle,
Yeah.
Then I guess let's go back to camp, where Villanelle is participating in an activity, and then May takes her away so they can scream. And it seems to me like they did not get far away enough from the camp that everyone wouldn't hear them and be like, why is someone screaming? But okay.
Are we just gonna, like, ignore the fact that this was basically just Edward and Bella going into the forest for the I know what you are, say it
I
out
would
loud.
Never ignore that.
Murderer. It just seems so much like it, like, yes, not going very far, just like going into the forest and having a confrontation about like knowing the other person. I just could not stop thinking about that.
How sure are you that killing Eve, the show, is literally referencing Twilight, the movie?
Mm-hmm. 80%.
Okay. Love that.
So yeah, May decided apparently that Villanelle's talking was convincing enough and she can trust her again, or at least she believes that Villanelle truly wants to become a better person.
And she thinks the only way to get there is for Villanelle to scream. Yeah. She literally says this is the only way you get to be who you want to be.
I think May just watches a lot of teen television.
and writes a lot of fan fiction.
Yes, and picks up the ideas of how to deal with events in your life that way.
Oh, honey. I mean, we do know that her only hobby is church, so that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Villanelle spins with Jesus. I expected this to be more fun, but it was okay.
It was so whatever. God, I did not care for that at all.
And she screams a little, and now she can be her true self. And here I noticed there's music very often starts at the end of one scene and begins into the next scene. And all the music that we heard, or almost all, is new. Mm-hmm. So not the same as in previous seasons. And yeah, it has some, like, maybe different tones. I think the previous music, which was great, had, like, one mood. And now we get a few different moods. But I love it a lot still.
Mm. Mm. I did not enjoy it that much in this episode, which only made me dislike the episode more. It just felt, I don't know, like it was too present, even though generally I love how present the music is on this show. But usually the music just makes me like really feel the feelings there. And here in a lot of scenes, I was just like concentrating on the music and it felt like it didn't quite belong. Oh, I'm such a bummer about this episode. I am gonna try to think of things that I enjoy. Here, I enjoyed Villanelle lying on the floor. I think Jodie Comer has never looked prettier.
Mm. We go back to Eve, and here we have another shot that I really loved in this episode. I really think that in this specific episode, I noticed way more camera work than ever before. Yeah, so Eve is waiting for our psychiatrist whom we met before. Does anyone remember his name?
Absolutely not.
And he is the guy that she wants to ask for a second opinion on how to approach Hélène, while he thinks that she's talking about Villanelle, which is funny. I want to say that I like this guy.
yeah.
He just seems pretty chill.
Just grateful for some brown liquor.
Yeah, he's very grateful for the liquor that Eve brought him. And then when she asks him how he gets things out of his patients, he tells her that people tell you things because they are gonna get something in return, and she just has to figure out what that is. And Eve concludes that, oh, okay, so then I really have to go and knock on Ellen's door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She basically just hears what she wants to hear.
As always.
Also, because he thinks that they're talking about Villanelle, he asks Eve how Villanelle is doing. And here, Eve's mask finally breaks and we see that she is actually, of course, totally invested in Villanelle. And yeah. She is actually questioning whether Villanelle might be becoming a quote-unquote Christian. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is code for a better person. And then this guy has a line that I really liked, which is, he thinks that reinvention is a form of avoidance. So he doubts it.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
Me too.
And I thought it was interesting, specifically in the context of this show. And that makes me hopeful that we are going to be done with Villanelle's trying to change. But yeah, this obviously applies to Villanelle, and I'm just thinking a lot about how Villanelle is not the only one who changed or pretended to change. We also have Eve, and I feel like I could describe what Eve did as a reinvention, but I don't feel like it's fake for her.
No, I think she came into herself.
Yeah, she didn't change purposefully or something. She just stopped pretending she is not this, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about this a lot because I am enjoying Eve so much in this season so far. Truly, she's the reason I enjoyed the season so far.
I kept thinking in this episode how, like, healthy she looks. Maybe this is the wrong word, but
no,
like just
yeah.
full of energy. And like usually, you know, when we saw her, she was just like kind of crouching down, and like her clothes got so much better in this season. And I don't know, she just like stands up more, like
yeah
upright, and it's so obvious. And I think Sandra Oh's acting is incredible.
Yeah, but so far they've done this part like really masterfully.
I wrote down the reinvention as a form of avoidance because I felt attacked. That's all I'm gonna say.
Then let's go to a swimming pool. Have either of you ever been to us? I'm really trying because I know now that we will not see actual locations, just interiors. And so, yeah, swimming pools, thoughts?
Yes. I've done it.
Love them.
Oh.
I am the person that prefers a swimming pool over a natural body of water.
Okay.
I feel neutral.
Okay. I am the person who loves natural bodies of water, but they are like camping, something that I don't get to experience as often as I would like. So I always think of swimming pools as like a substitute for
the real thing.
For the real thing. We are at the swimming pool with Carolyn and Vlad. And Carolyn is like, when are you gonna give me everything I want? And Vlad is like, first I want something in return.
So she gives it to him. Tamara, do you understand what's happening here?
I kind of got it.
Oh.
No, actually, go ahead, Tamara. I don't think I got it.
I mean, I'm sure I don't understand all of the intricacies, but basically he has pictures of her ex-coworkers or something like that, and he wants information on them so that he could blackmail them or whatever, get information out of them about the MI5-6s. So he's just showing her the pictures and she thinks of the thing that would get them blackmailed easiest. Also, gets through like five lines of dialogue with this really weird accent that I cannot fucking place. I mean, I know it's supposed to be Russian, but I was listening to it and I was like, what? And then he just gives up in the middle of it and goes back to the British accent. So terrible job.
I feel like sometimes he's trying to do the Dracula accent, and he just like slips in and out of that.
I kind of got the things you said when I was watching the second time. What I still don't get is, what exactly does Vlad want to achieve by blackmailing them?
So Vlad is working for the Russian whatever, right?
Intelligence.
Yeah. They just want us like spy on the British intelligence. I think that's it. I think there's nothing more going on here. And Caroline wants access to the Russian intelligence stuff so she could get info on the 12.
Because you can only get info on the 12 from Russians. And
yep.
The Russian intelligence and the British intelligence are enemies.
Yep.
Okay, I will now try to let go of this.
Cool.
So let's do that by going back to the camp. We are in some kind of kitchen where Villanelle is trying to help May. And May's dad is trying to get May away from Villanelle, basically.
Same at this point.
Yes.
Yep.
And May isn't into that and she stays with Villanelle and then she tells Villanelle how he's a hypocrite because he's not any better than her. And Villanelle is shocked and offended that she would compare the two of them. And then she tells Villanelle a very secret, which Villanelle promises she would never share with anyone. And also gets to it through some more fun manipulation by saying that Jesus wouldn't want you to keep this secret. which May must be so in love to fall for that, I don't know.
What May shares is that her dad was driving drunk and got in a car crash with his wife in the car and his wife died. And this actually kind of explains Phil to me because he is presented as someone who doesn't care about religion. Like, he's a vicar, but he, every time we're in these situations where there's something, like, religious going on, he looks exasperated and, like, he thinks this is the dumbest thing in the world. At the same time, he does believe in God, I guess. But if being a vicar is his repentment for killing his wife, then this kind of makes sense to me.
I would understand it as, yes, his repentance, or also as if he were a vicar prior to this and he used to be more like into it and then his wife died in this way and he just lost all faith but like is continuing to do this job.
Let's continue and get through the worst scene I've ever seen.
Let me start again with a thing that I liked.
Okay.
I liked in the beginning how, like, the face on Villanelle, again, just like Jodie Comer's acting, with when she's like, am I Hitler? And I don't know, that's good, that's good to me.
Okay, all the notes that I have for this is horrible scene I can't watch, and as far as I'm concerned, we don't have to talk about it further. But we can if you want.
I agree. I skipped it the second time I watched it. It's horrible. But I think we should at least mention what happens. The whole camp is playing this game where you put someone's name on someone's forehead and they have to guess who they are. And because Phil intentionally puts Hitler on Villanelle to annoy her, she decides that she wants to annoy him as well. And names him Mary, which was the name of his wife, and then tells everyone that he killed her in this car crash. So then she leaves this group of people, goes to the kitchen, talks to Jesus again. Jesus is not happy.
I mean, he's not happy, but also he can't stay mad at Villanelle.
Of course.
I think here is the place where I actually enjoyed their dialogue, because I did enjoy, like, interpreting it as Villanelle's inner dialogue of how she justifies the things that she does. This was the first time in this whole show where Villanelle tried to justify something and I didn't hate it. And I think this is this show's best effort to look into Villanelle's inner world and how she sees herself and her role in other people's lives and deaths. So I enjoyed this, even though it's pretty obvious. But I especially liked the line where Jesus is like, "You did the right thing. We can't have murderers as vicars." Yeah. And Villanelle's like, "What? You can't?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't mean you. You're fine."
Yeah, yeah. I also really enjoyed that. I also enjoyed Jesus just like sprinkling in some of his fun stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my favorite part of the whole religion storyline is the little parts that show you that Villanelle actually read the Bible and remembered it. Even though, like, the whole transformation is only performative, she did remember the words and she knows how to use them. At the end, Jesus says, like, to Villanelle, like, "Sure, you've been naughty, but he has a really nasty streak," which was like, you're not just justifying yourself, you're like vilifying someone else way more than is reasonable to justify your own actions.
Yeah.
Like, the cognitive dissonance that Villanelle goes through is fun and also horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, then she goes back to the group expecting them all to be really grateful and happy and is confused when they are not.
And also she thinks that she is now de facto their new leader.
Yes.
She starts giving out tasks immediately.
And then we have Barbara speaking for all the campers because the other campers can't say anything. They just say, "Yeah," and they agree, which was bad. It was bad. But yeah, Barbara tells Villanelle that she is bad and she should go away.
And she does that.
And we also learned that Villanelle invented the Perisher of the Week award.
Of course she did.
Of course,
I respect
she did.
That.
We get first a brief look into Carolyn's future existence for a while, at least. She is at the Moscow safe house. It's ugly. There's a rat, and because we are stupid and wouldn't get it otherwise, she says, "A rat for the rat."
I'm so glad she said it.
Yeah, that's it for now for Carolyn. We go back to Eve and Yusuf. And Eve is talking about how she might die. She's really considering this option.
And he gives her 4 bathroom breaks. This is not enough, right?
But he says like something about nervous poops, so maybe he only counts poop breaks?
No, I don't think so.
Eve is being a little mood swingy. When they go to the train station, she's all like, "Hell yeah, I'm gonna eat a steak." And then when they get to Paris, she doesn't want to eat the steak. That's how we learn about her mood. Yusuf is trying to talk some sense into her. He also asks her what's up and says that at the beginning of the journey, she was all dragon tattoo, and now she is Eeyore. So I imagine this as like a scale from dragon tattoo to Eeyore. Where are you on this scale?
Who's Eeyore?
Eeyore is the donkey from Winnie the Pooh.
Oh.
The one who is always sad.
Is 0 the donkey and 7 the dragon tattoo?
Yeah.
I have very limited knowledge on both pieces of media, but I think I have enough to say that I am 100% Eeyore.
So you're a 0 on the Yusuf scale?
Yes, yeah, sure. Also, I want to say that even though I have this limited knowledge on these pieces of media, I also think that this is exactly it. Like, that is exactly what Eve was doing in this episode.
Yeah, it's a very good description.
Yeah, very apt.
Insightful. Tamara, how would you rate yourself?
So I have 0 revenge needs. However, I am very passionate, so I'm gonna put myself at a 2. Naya?
I actually would put myself on 2 as well. I think I am very scared and often sad, but I have just like a little bit of motivation and self-esteem.
Okay, then if you're 2, I'm 3.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yes.
See, now that you're saying these things, like you said motivated, Tamara, you said passionate, like I feel those things very strongly about myself. So now I'm thinking I'm like a 9.
No, I think it's correct that you're a 0.
No, I also think that.
Okay, let's get back to the scene where they don't have this fun conversation. Instead, Eve takes a steak knife, which Yusuf catches immediately. But then he also takes her bag from her, which is very rude and uncool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he very aggressively punches the table, which is also very rude and uncool.
Yeah. Very toxic masculinity vibes.
Men are not allowed to do that.
On the other hand, he said he very much supports her if she wants to die. He just thinks she shouldn't die quite yet.
Yeah, I thought that was very respectful and nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm actually not kidding.
Oh, no, me neither.
Speaking of people sitting at a table, we go to Carolyn and Vlad doing one of the things that bother me the most in this show, which is laughing at something very much, but we don't get to hear what they're laughing about because they didn't bother to write something very funny. We only hear that it's something about cooking, and I want to know what.
I noticed how broken Carolyn looks in this scene, and this is also connected to what we were already talking about with Eve, like the character development of Eve. I feel similarly about Carolyn, except that it's going in the opposite direction. Yeah. It's weird to call that character development. Yeah. She's like decaying, it feels like.
I kind of disliked where Carolyn's character went in season 3. It makes more sense to me here and now. She brought the rat as a present.
That was smart.
Vlad calls it a little light intimidation. And then she gets some feedback on the info she gave. It didn't all go swimmingly. Hugo is very much falling for the honey trap, which I kind of look forward to seeing. But unfortunately, one of the other people, who was a girl that was addicted to opioids, when they tried to blackmail her about it, she committed suicide. So they didn't get any info out of her, and now they're mad about it. And Carolyn, on the other hand, feels some human emotions and feels guilty about indirectly causing the death of this person.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at that. I just looked at your notes and I saw that you wrote has a little anxiety attack, and my notes here are have a little panic attack. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. It's true. She goes to the bathroom to have a little anxiety / panic attack. It's very small. Thoughts, Tamara?
I wrote Carolyn is upset.
Perfect.
I also wrote that the restaurant they're in is very ugly.
Yeah, I agree that the restaurant looked ugly and that feels authentically Russian.
I continue to love and hate their coloring choices, which is that Eastern Europe / where Carolyn is very like orangey brown and dull colors.
/ where Carolyn is?
Yeah, like MI6 offices are very much okay. Like that as
okay,
well.
I was like, Mallorca?
Yeah. While actually neither Eve nor Villanelle for now have gotten very bright colors either. But I feel like Eve's are more neutral.
I did to myself explain this ugly restaurant as this being part of Carolyn's torture.
Yeah, might be.
I think that's not good torture. I think Carolyn can easily take this.
Yeah, it's mild. It's mild intimidation.
Yeah, a little intimidation. Yeah, so let's move on from it. We see Eve doing the exact opposite of what everyone told her to do.
What?
She would never. She is getting ready while Yusuf is asleep. And she goes to knock on Hélène's door. I mean, I'm happy for her.
She doesn't even get to actually knock, though, so that's sad.
Yeah. No, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
So Hélène opens and asks if she came back to get her tracker. And Eve is like, no, I came to cook you dinner, but I will take it. And then Hélène explains, like, do you know how I knew that it's a tracker? It's because I don't use this particular type of tampons. And this is like, yeah, because otherwise if I just had a tampon in my purse that I knew wasn't mine, that would be fine.
I think she just wanted to talk about putting her fingers in her body.
Absolutely. But I also think it's absolutely the case that she immediately noticed that she has a tracker device in her purse and purposefully left it in so that she would lure whoever put it there to her house.
Of course.
Let's go one step back, though, and just mention that Hélène asks Eve what they're gonna have for dinner, and Eve says shepherd's pie.
Yeah, obviously this is supposed to mirror that scene in season one, and this is just one of the things.
It's also the thing that Nico always made for Eve.
And I don't believe that Eve knows how to make it.
And Hélène ordered that Nico should be, well, not murdered, but removed from the scene.
But I do want to say it's completely stupid to decide to make that when you are making someone dinner, because it's gonna take like 3 hours and there's so much work.
I mean, this is completely because she does not know how to make this.
And there's just like potatoes rolling off the counter. And so let's go back to the moment where Eve cuts herself because she is so distracted at the mention of a vagina. And then Hélène decides to flirt and she goes to Eve and sucks the blood off her finger.
And guess what? This does nothing for me.
I didn't feel like, whoa, I'm so into this. But I could very much feel the sexual tension that Hélène brings, just like you were mentioning in the scenes with Villanelle in the previous season. I thought, that's a cool character trait, to just have sexual chemistry with everyone.
I get that, and I think I would enjoy this in any other scene, but I was annoyed with this scene, and that's why, like, even this, like, did not do anything for me.
Okay.
Why were you annoyed with this scene?
Because it just doesn't make any sense to me to, like, reference that scene from season one, and, like, it doesn't make sense to me with the dynamic of Eve and Hélène, and also just most of the things that were happening just made me roll my eyes.
Yeah, I also did not like this scene in general, but I did like the blood leaking because it was doing things for Eve. Like, similarly, as Naya said, it's not that the situation itself was super interesting to me, but Eve was reacting to it, and that was interesting to me.
Well, I actually enjoyed the whole scene. So then we have this whole scene where Elaine is like torturing slash testing Eve, but in a very sexual way, by putting her hand on the stove. And they kind of talk about bringing down the 12. And we find out that Elaine wants to bring down the 12 as well, which she just tells Eve. But yeah, it seems that she's the one that's killing off the 12, I guess. Yeah,
I have four theories.
Oh my god!
Wow. I thought this was so straightforward. How can you have four theories?
Okay, go ahead. I can't wait.
Either she is lying to Eve, or she is doing this because she wants more power, or she is a double agent and is not actually like the 12, but she is pretending to be in the 12 for the 12 to think so that she takes them down, or she is in the 12 and was genuinely part of them, but since has decided to take... Oh, wait, no, that's the same.
No, it's not quite.
It's not.
Okay, because the fourth one was because of chaos.
Yeah, I guess when I thought this was straightforward, I didn't take into consideration what Elaine's motives are for doing this. I am kind of hoping we get more info on that. Again, wishful thinking. But I guess in some kind of way it makes a little sense that she just tells this to Eve, because she does know that Eve wants the same thing. So it's not that dangerous to let her know. And maybe she also does think that they would make a good team and all of that. Yeah. But they have to first test each other a little bit and play these power games before they can trust each other enough.
I wasn't a fan of this conversation at first, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, this is so much better than the vague plots that we got previously, because this is a lot more understandable to me than what they were trying to achieve in season 3.
So far, I agree. Then we have another little interaction where Elaine asks Eve, does it hurt? And Eve says, only if I let it. And this is how we find out that Eve speaks French.
Yep.
Very fun. So then Elaine lets go of Eve and gives her a frozen lobster tail to help her birds.
And then we get the most important dialogue of this scene, in my opinion. Eve wants to know more about the 12 and she asks, who's at the top? And Elaine answers, I'll tell you after dessert. And
do you
have to explain?
It's a sexual reference.
Yes.
Oh. I honestly didn't get it before now. Then Elaine's child wakes up. Her name is Chloe. And she just comes to the kitchen being like, Mom, Mama.
Great impression of a child there.
I just think I'm trying to imagine how I felt when I was woken up and went to tell my mom that I had woken up.
And Elaine, as a power play, tells her child that Eve is very good at telling stories, and I hate her using her child like this. And and then Eve goes to read the story and starts reading in French as a power play, and I hate that even more.
Okay.
It's just so embarrassing. I don't know, the way she like looks up at Elaine like, haha, I am reading French. Do you see this? I hated it.
I understand and sympathize. However, I thought it was fucking hilarious how 10 seconds prior, Eve was being tortured with literal fire and she was fine, but she has to interact with a child and suddenly she actually looks like she's being tortured. So,
well, that just makes sense for Eve.
It, yeah, of course I enjoy it does. How much it totally makes does. Sense. Yeah.
Well, the story that Eve tells Chloe is another very obvious metaphor that I don't think we need to go into.
I wasn't listening to it. There was something about same. Two princesses.
Please go into it because I did not. Oh, I see.
I was just so annoyed when we were doing this that I was like, shut up.
So there were two princesses, Eve and Elaine, who both wanted to kill the same dragon, the 12. And then Eve explains that one princess, Elaine, was stronger, prettier, and had more power. I thought here that it's interesting that Eve kind of compliments Elaine's looks.
Oh, yeah.
I disagree personally, but I get it.
I think it makes sense for Eve to do this since she's been flirting with Elaine this whole time. But also, Eve, come on.
Yeah. But the second princess has powers that the first princess has no idea about.
What, Eve?
Truly nothing. She says that, and then she like kind of strokes Chloe's hair in a way that looks like maybe she's threatening her, but then she just gets up to leave. So I'm not sure if that was meant that way or not, but I hope it's not a thing.
I didn't read it like that, so.
I don't think it was like explicitly threatening. Yes.
I didn't like it either. Leave kids out of this. And then Eve goes to leave after saying one more time, who's at the top? And Elaine follows her and asks her, what is it exactly that she wants to do? And Eve says that she will tell her after dessert sometime. And then she returns the lobster tail and leaves. And is like she has kind of a neutral expression as she's walking away. But I think she's exhilarated, kind of.
Mm-hmm. At the camp, we are finally at the end of this plot. Christian plot. Woo! Villanelle is listening to May and Phil talking about her and how May now truly believes that Villanelle cannot be helped and she is evil. And this upsets Villanelle, of course. So she pulls out a tent nail, goes into the tent and murders them both.
She also takes a hammer.
Yeah, she also takes a hammer, and Phil and May, they scream a lot at night where no one else is around and no one notices. So,
yep.
Fun. After this is done, we get also the final scene with Jesus. Villanelle goes into her tent where Jesus meets her. I actually don't remember what they're talking about. I just know that they kiss and then Villanelle crucifies him.
So what they do talk about is kind of this conversation where Villanelle accuses Jesus of fooling her, playing her, and he admits to it and is kind of proud of himself. He says no one else could have done it. And then Villanelle says that she really thought she could do it, and Jesus says that she didn't stand a chance. Which, again, I enjoyed as her inner monologue. And then she kisses him and then crucifies him and tries to suffocate him, but she can't do it. She can't murder Jesus. Jesus boos Villanelle for not killing him as she leaves the tent and hopefully leaves behind this whole storyline forever.
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
I enjoy like the way she looks leaving that place.
Yeah, it's good when she leaves places. Mm. And that's the episode.
Let's go to Uti.
Yes.
There was just one outfit in this episode. However, there is a lot going on. So let's go through this. Villanelle is wearing a camping outfit, which consists of short mom jeans.
Very, very, very good.
A sky blue t-shirt. Over this, she's wearing a let's call it a hoodie that's a patchwork. Naya, I'm sure you have one.
I kind of do.
And then over this, she's wearing another. This piece of clothing is a mystery to me. So it looks like a sweater and it looks chunky, but I don't think it's knitted. But it's also not a fabric, or it's a really weirdly done fabric. I don't fucking know what's going on here. And also she is wearing sandals with socks. And her signature Christian necklace with the golden cross.
I enjoyed her outfit this episode very much.
Perfect, beautiful, hashtag me.
Yeah.
I also loved it a lot. Except how this knot sweater perplexed me, made me angry, made me question everything that I know.
I do want to say I am extremely unironically a huge supporter of socks with sandals. It's a good thing to do, and I think more people should do it if they want and not feel shame about it. And I am immediately like 10% more attracted to someone if they wear socks with sandals.
Can I give an honorable mention to an outfit that was not worn by Villanelle?
Please do.
I want to mention Hélène's outfit in the scene in her house because I hated it so much.
It was extremely ugly.
I think it makes complete sense for her character, also just in general, like a rich, fancy lady to wear this horrifying outfit. Maybe that's why I hated this scene, because I just kept looking at it and being grossed out. I hate it so much.
Nina hates yoga pants.
I mean, brown yoga pants with,
I liked it as an outfit that I'm sure Hélène would not choose to be seen in if she had the time to decide. But also, I liked it as, as a representation of what a rich person would wear when they want to be comfortable at home.
Yeah, like I said, it makes complete sense.
Yes.
I hate it so much.
Yes. So, time for the ratings?
Yes. My rating is the reality show The Real L Word, which is a reality TV show that was made after The L Word came out, and it just about lesbians in LA. And I choose this because it also depicts terrible people and it also sucks.
My rating is the movie The Incredibly True Adventures of Two Girls in Love. Because I watched it and I thought, oh my god, this is so bad. But also, I appreciate it as something that was necessary to happen, and like I appreciate the elements of it.
That's a good description of that movie, I think.
My rating is the movie Cabaret because it contains a scene of people screaming as a way to let go of their emotions, which is something that anytime I see it in media, it really impacts me and I super want to do it. There's a scene where Sally brings Brian under a railway bridge, and when the train is running over them, they scream, which is way more fun for me as an idea, where like you actually are not scaring anyone with your screaming, unlike what May and Villanelle were doing. And that distinction also represents kind of how I feel about Cabaret as a piece of media, which is incredible, amazing, best movie. And then on the other hand, this episode, which is just kind of okay.
So next up is the game.
The game goes like this. In this episode, we have Eve describe herself as, I like holidays, dogs, long walks on the beach, and I want to bring down the 12. And I want you both, and myself, us, To write a little intro to ourselves like this, where the first three things are like a dating profile thing and all three of them are false. And then you end with something that's like the core of your being. Here is what you need to know about me. I like partying, meeting new people, and just having fun. And I want to overthrow capitalism.
I like waking up early, girl bossing all day, partying all night, and I want to make a difference in the world.
I like jogging, cats, and romantic getaways, and I want to free this world of fast fashion.
Okay.
This was very good.
Yeah.
Please, listeners, send us your descriptions.
Via email.
It can also be an Instagram message.
And we also have Twitter now, which is a betrayal to our former selves in season one.
Did we say we would never have Twitter?
Yeah, we made a bunch of jokes about not having Twitter.
Oh yeah, right, that was
tweet
our thing.
At us.
You can now add us.
At queering_Eve. Everywhere else it's Queering Eve, so on Instagram, and our email is queeringeve@gmail.com. And now I truly became that thing that we made fun of all of season one.
So we almost forgot our new corner, but we're gonna do it. It's predictions corner. First thing I wanna comment on is that our previous prediction that the church storyline will be over after half of this episode didn't quite come true, but I do have hope that it is now over. So we were not far off. So do we have any new predictions and wishes after this episode?
After this episode, my prediction is that this season is gonna suck. I'm sorry. I hate being this way, and it's not actually my prediction because I am an optimist and I do like want it to get good again, and it's just that this episode did bum me out. So
my prediction is that I will continue to be very sad about the lack of new exciting locations, but also my prediction is that after this episode we get back the good old Villanelle and then more fun things happen. That's a wish, not a prediction.
My prediction / wish is that Yusuf is gonna blend into the background and not be an important character anymore. I don't mean that everything about him is negative. I did enjoy a lot of the conversations he had with Eve, but just they did this before where they introduced a new character, mm-hmm. and then way before the season ended, this character wasn't important anymore. And also, I am just sorry, not a fan of Yusuf. I want to meet Pam instead.
My wish is that we get more Pam soon.
Yes.
And my prediction is that I will continue being more and more attracted to Eve as this season goes on.
I have a wish. I hope that hot E will come back.
Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Queering Eve. We will record another one. We release new episodes when we can. Have a nice week, and remember, reinvention is a form of avoidance. Apple Podcast, it really helps. It means so much to us.
And we're selling
out. If you want to support us, join our Patreon.